The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
To, by the way, because I'm gonna forget it. So if you
scam goddess,
scam goddess,
scam goddess. That's what she says.
It has a song to it.
Uh-huh, it does.
Okay.
I'm pretty much Fortune Femster because they literally just did that on the podcast. So maybe Lacey Mosley will have me on next.
And what book are you reading?
You know what? This was a gift from a friend who is the founder owner of BuildWit. The company that you've never yet heard of, that you will definitely.
Okay.
It showed up on my doorstep. I told him that we're growing and expanding, and without any question, he sent me the book that I guess has been the most formative to him, The Psychology of Money, Morgan Housel, the very first story. I'm not kidding you. These really rich people make... someone at a hotel, go to a bank, get $1,000 coins, then chuck these $1,000 coins into the river, kind of like if they were, what's it called when you bounce stuff?
Skipping.
Skipping. Kind of like they were skipping rocks, but with $1,000 coin. And it's basically, I think I'm about two pages in, meant to showcase the fact that money can change you if you let it.
Where do I get
that? Not to say I have any money.
Where do I get $1,000 coins?
The bank?
They have coins.
Yeah. Is that now your 2022? Wait, what year are we in?
It's 2022. In 2022.
2022 resolution. Get.
So if I go to the bank, they make coins that are $1,000, yeah. Not bills.
Coins. You do have to have $1,000 in your bank account.
I'm now Googling this right now because this sounds completely made up.
How dare you say Morgan Housel would lie like that? I think you're actually saying I would lie like that.
I get 1,000 coins Amazon store. You sure they're not in another country? Perhaps in another country.
I'm literally on page 3. I'm not sure about anything.
You can get 1,000 pesos.
Well.
I mean, but you are you've been in the world, right?
I have been in the world.
So I feel like you don't seem to doubt the fact that, like, you've never seen one. You've never heard of one. Like, bills. Like, I don't even think there's bills bigger than 100. Is there $1,000 bills?
I mean, I've also never seen someone build the type of company that I'm trying to, and I know that I can do it.
I think that's great. I just think that's a weird... I just think something got missed in between pages 2 and 3. Something got missed. I think they were in another country where they make such coins.
It's too late. I cannot start over. I'm already too deep into this book, so we'll never know.
Page 2.
Yeah, page 2.
Where did you grow up?
I was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and... raised in Chandler, Arizona, suburbs of Phoenix.
Okay. That sounds boring. I'll be honest.
Lots of soccer fields and dairy farms. Yeah.
Right. And hot?
So hot.
How is there dairy farms, though, in the arid desert of Arizona?
Well, to be honest, development has gotten its way and there are a few cows left. But yeah, good childhood pastime was pretending like we would stay up late enough to cow tip. You know what cow tipping is?
I grew up here. You think I don't know what fucking cow tipping is? Come on.
Well, I moved to Atlanta 3 years ago and have not seen a cow since, so.
Well, definitely you heard of friends. So I was just telling your
barista
employee, your barista, about growing up here in the suburbs. And so we never did it, but you heard about these people who were like, yeah, my cousins, they fucking go cow tipping. Because it used to be just outside where we lived. So Marietta, Roswell, this is like, that was sort of the top of the perimeter. Like there was no, like Alpharetta was like, there was nothing up there yet, right? There was just, I mean, there was some neighborhoods, and there certainly wasn't like Cumming and Johns Creek and the next 10 towns that are now basically from here to, you know, Tennessee, there's fucking suburbs, right? But back, but back then you did not have to go too far outside the city to meet some real country folk. So yes, I've heard of cow tipping. It was the long way of...
But have you been cow tipping?
I've never actually tipped a cow.
Yeah, me neither. I could never stay up late enough.
I would never tip a cow. I think you have to be shit-faced too. I think, like, seriously, do you have to be drunk to think you can push over this very large animal?
You probably
so could. life was good there.
Life was good there. It was very quaint. Played, you know, soccer. Went to school, and then I actually stayed in Arizona for university. Went to Arizona State.
Okay.
Go Sun Devils.
Okay. And do you hate the other one?
I pretend to, absolutely.
But you don't really care.
I couldn't care less. And then I graduated, and the day after I graduated, I boarded a plane and went to go work for Habitat for Humanity in Guatemala.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's kind of where this whole...
What a disgusting, dirty hippie you are. I had no idea.
Not in the slightest. Guatemala is absolutely...
No, but you. Oh. That's what disgusting hippies do. Did, in Arizona, did they know you were a gay?
I don't know. Arizona, write in. Did you know I was a gay? Do you think they'll write in?
Tweet at us. did you come out, as we say in the business?
As we say in the business. In Arizona, no, not really. Those formative years, I was, kind of still very much pretending to be a straight.
Right.
To borrow your terminology.
Right. Did you date any dudes?
No.
Never.
That was a telltale sign.
Okay.
I actually did. I had one boyfriend for 2 weeks, and I broke up with him to be with God.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
How's that going?
Really good. Thank you so much for asking.
Are you still tight with the GOD?
No. As my partner likes to say, we believe in the group of dogs.
Okay, sure. Whatever you need it to stand for, that's fine.
Exactly.
Some people say good orderly direction.
Definitely don't believe in that.
Okay, well, it's the thing that people believe.
That's fair.
So it never came up. There weren't whispers in the schoolyard.
Not that I know of. I imagine that there's lots of people kind of queer and not queer that can relate to this, but I really kept myself, busy, like my mind occupied. So then I didn't have to confront, those demons and other demons. And so it was easy to go on not dating and just kind of being good at things and whatnot. Does that make sense?
No, totally. I think, you know, as backwards as we can be, we've come so far, right? Mm-hmm. So I was born, you're not going to believe this, hope you're fucking sitting down. I was born 50 years ago, okay? So 1972, so in a couple months, I will be 50, okay? So when I was going to high school, right, like, especially like Georgia suburbs, like that, you absolutely stood out, right? If you dressed like she did, you stood out. You know what I mean? Like that term freaks and geeks and all that stuff. Like it was a big, big deal. And coming out was a big, big deal. And when, you know, celebrities did. And like, it's so much more like, not that nobody gives a shit, but kind of nobody gives a shit. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying you don't experience oppression and judgment and laws that are fucked up. But you know what I'm saying?
I can only imagine that it is worlds easier for me to have come out and to operate the business like we do, kind of literally wearing shirts that say queer and caffeinated.
Who doesn't want to be both of those things? Yeah, okay, right, am I right?
you heard it here first,
folks. Right?
But yeah, it's worlds easier. It's not kind of easy enough. But it's so fun. Like some of our team, their significant others are in the academy, and they teach the young pupils of the world. And the way that
you said the academy, like capital letters.
Sorry, they're professors.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, the academy.
I noticed you said university, and that's what like Europeans do. That they Americans say college. Europeans typically say when I went to university. So I sort of like, oh, that must be because she spent a lot of time in Guatemala or whatever, that she calls it university.
Do you hear that, the EU? Give me a passport. But yeah, so as they're teaching the young pupils of the world, it is so interesting because the way that these kind of incoming freshmen navigate the classroom, everything is so much more inclusive, so much more normal. And to be frank, they are so much kinder on, you know, the older generation, people even of your age that I am. Like, they're so much more forgiving. Like, it's a different, they grew up in a different time. We can do better to educate them. We can lead with grace. And the way that it makes me really optimistic for where the world is headed and how queer folks will get to navigate this world. As many people have said before, you know, it's about time that the straights start coming out. You know, we're over it. I don't want to have to come out anymore.
Right.
But we do. We do daily. Like, to be a queer person, to be other than kind of what society expects of you, it requires coming out every day. Whether that be, oh, my partner, my girlfriend, and I are going to this, and, you know, people giving a double take or taking
off. But a lot less double takes than before.
I will have to ask the older generation. For their hot take on that.
So to give it some more context, so my parents, right? So my mom, okay, I'm going to say inherently prejudiced in the worst way because they don't think they're prejudiced, okay? Like terms they use, phrases they use, and you're like, you can't say that. This is like me in 1988, right? And her saying, what? What's the problem? Like literally. Mm-hmm. Not everybody that generation. My dad isn't that way, right? But my mother was, right? Mm-hmm. My mom and my stepdad kind of both. So, yeah, like the whole, like, you know, so what I've seen growing up, here's the first gay TV character. Here's the first gay reality star. Like, mm-hmm. Ellen comes out. Like, this was a big fucking mm-hmm. deal. So this is all stuff in my life. Having said that, my kids, so I have this suburban life where I grew up. My kids grow up here, right? They go to Drew Charter, right? They are the minority oftentimes in classes, right? So I am thrilled that they've seen so much more than I have. Because, like I said, I didn't see anybody that looked different than me until I was 20-something. So it's going to be interesting to see how their worldview is different than mine. Because, you know, we all have these prejudices. We all have these ideas of what a person or a thing is. So it's just going to be, like, I'm glad that I sort of get firsthand view of, like, oh, this is what it's going to be like for you, who've grown up very different than me.
So as a parent, how do you anticipate that or plan for that? Yeah, that... awake like that.
I mean, it's funny, the thing I can remember, and it's so funny, like things happen so fast. I definitely remember my friend has a kid who has like developmental issues. And I definitely remember like the first time they brought him over and they like literally were like sort of stunned by it. Cause they don't like when you're five, you don't process why another 5-year old isn't functioning. And I remember like us having to sort of explain that, right? Like that was definitely like, oh my God, here comes a teaching moment where I can say, hey, not everybody's the same and kids are different, blah, blah. And like in terms of race, it's never, like I said, they just grow up here. Like they just grow up, like they've grown up what they've grown up with. So I don't think we truly know what they're going to be like, right? Like I said, they've been the minority in their class, depending on the class, or like my son played on a football team or he was like literally the only white kid, right? And what I experienced from that was acceptance. I'm like, nobody seems to be right. And that I was grateful for, but we're going to see, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think your kids are going to be pretty cool from what I've seen of them. Remember the last time they threw a shoe in the bathroom. I think your kids are the sweetest.
They can be, sure. They can be. why did they throw a shoe in the bathroom? Oh, Jackson threw River's shoe, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you go to Guatemala.
Ah, yes.
Okay. How old were you?
How old are you when you graduate college?
21, 22.
There you go. I was probably 21.
And so you, because what? Like, I'm going to go save the world? Or what did you, as a 21-year-old, think about it?
I'd definitely like to say that my approach wasn't that white savior. I think anytime a white person takes a role like that, there's definitely work to be done. But I actually got a job. I worked for the program kind of from behind a laptop for a bit on some research projects, and then got the opportunity to go and fundraise. So essentially my job required, you know, being the white person in the office that could hop on Zoom and make the, yeah, connect with the different folks.
Right. It's probably Skype back then.
You're right. Pre-Zoom.
Yeah.
You're right. Hop on Skype. Yeah. Yeah, it was a fantastic time. My job allowed me to traverse all of Guatemala. Mind you, Guatemala is the size of Tennessee.
Right.
But it is beautiful and dynamic, and like the landscape and the terrain, absolutely stunning. I was there for just under 2 years. And
was there a tale that you're going to tell me where you smelled the perfect coffee bean and the light bulb went off and you were like, oh,
it's a little bit sadder than that.
Okay.
But, yeah, I actually worked with a lot of, folks who produced coffee and was going on a fundraising trip. Cause I told you that was part of my role, in Portland. And so I worked with, we were going to fundraise from a couple different roasters in the Portland area, and said, wow, wouldn't this be fantastic if I could trace their supply chain back to the producer level and ensure, showcase to them that the person that they've entrusted to buy all this coffee from is treating their kind of the folks who hand pick all of the coffee beans well, that through their purchase, the whole supply chain is having better outcomes. So we did just that. I worked with all of these different areas of Guatemala, because folks came to this one coffee plantation from everywhere. And so all of our habitat affiliates across the nation went and basically assessed where they were living and did what they called a healthy home assessment. And turns out all of these folks who worked, you know, for 10 hours a day hand-picking coffee, were all living in extreme poverty, despite the fact that these big roasters were touting that they were paying X amount of money for coffee.
Right.
And so I got really confused and wanted to learn more. And so we actually started Fink at a Filter, a friend of mine and I, as a little blog, a way to try to make sense of all of these things, like fair trade. What can it do for the coffee producer?
What is the finca, by the way?
Finca means farm in
okay.
Spanish.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a nod to farm to table.
Oh, right.
In which we now have a copyright for. so yeah.
You have copyrighted Fink at a Filter.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. You internet sleuths, get out of here. So yeah.
It's super catchy.
Thank you.
I always say branding and names and logos, like, don't have to be perfect, because people get very hung up in that when they're launching a business. But if you get it right, it can be fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
If you nail it, right? If you like, if somebody nails, whether it's a store or a movie or whatever, you're like, oh, fucking awesome. So anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
And I didn't even know what it meant. I just knew that's what you were about. I was like, oh, that's what they're about. Okay. I should have Googled it, right?
Yeah, it's all right. We forgive you.
Okay.
So yeah, so essentially my aha moment was when I realized that the retail side of things, so this cup of coffee, was really exploiting the folks further down the supply chain that debatably work the hardest and run the most risk in this business. So Fink at a Filter then became a place where we chatted about things, how we could conceptualize, and then we both realized that we knew nothing. And so we actually both went on our separate ways to go to grad school. So that's what brought me to this great state of Georgia. I went to Emory to study international development. And then I thought that I was going to get away from coffee. I said, I don't know if I want to do this. It's really complex. It's very kind of tedious work. There's a lot of money behind keeping things as like the status quo, right? These huge conglomerates.
Big coffee.
Big coffee, baby. Exactly.
Fuck those fucking people.
You know, big coffee's got its role.
Right. Folgers can take it. Fucking fuck them.
Yeah, but don't sue us.
Don't worry about it. They're not going to sue us.
Okay. So yeah. So then I landed here for grad school. Fell in love and stayed.
That's how it goes.
That's how it goes.
Falling in love in the ATL.
Falling in love in the ATL. Yeah, with an actual Atlanta native.
So, but how we still haven't. We need to talk about how you go from from blog to table, how you go from blog to business.
Yeah, perseverance. I applied all of my studies to coffee, even though I said I wasn't going to, and then was doing some research and was optimistic that pre-pandemic, because I graduated in 2020 into, you know, the heart of the beast, and graduated thinking that...
You guys were open before that, though, no?
No. We've only been open here in Wild Heaven for less than a year. Can you believe that?
No, I cannot.
Me neither.
I can tell you you're better than the people that were here before.
Thank you. Yeah, we're having...
Do many people tell you that? It's okay. Listen, we're not going to mention their name, and if you want to fucking do the research and figure it out, that's fine. I can just tell you that I live across the street, right? Formerly. Mm-hmm. I came here all the time, right? With my boys, mm-hmm. with myself, by myself, whatever. And it seemed to take an awful long time to get anything, and it wasn't that great. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was prior to us, correct?
Correct. Correct.
Yeah, we're having a whole lot of fun with it. So to fill that gap, to fill that kind of time gap. So I graduated into a pandemic, wasn't sure what to do. All of the money for the fund, like all of the funding for what I thought that I would do, coffee research wise, was no longer there. Everybody was on a hiring freeze in the international development world. And so I wasn't yet ready to give up my dream of working in the coffee industry for kind of a corporate 9-to-5. And so I said, okay, I'm going to start a online coffee subscription that will work with all Atlanta roasters and try to bring more transparency to the sector, because that's what I was really doing. And it was really fun and did not at all work at scale. We were having big goals and big conversations and asking a lot of our roasting partners with little payoff to them, because we had like less than 50 subscribers. So we got the opportunity to open up our kind of humble brick and mortar here in the Wild Heaven Brewery. And that was the catalyst to grow that scale, to be able to have the...
You found them or they found you?
Yes. I worked for Wild Heaven all through grad school. As a bartender in the Avondale location. And so they knew that I was a coffee nerd. I had started the online subscription while I was working there. So some of the, I would do bring in coffee on occasion and whatnot. And then when they were looking to migrate away from their then coffee partner, they asked me, and I had absolutely no clue what I was doing. All I knew was that if I have, more of an audience, I can buy more coffee, and then this idea can get to scale that quicker or at all. And that's what we've done. So now we have a team of 8 badass baristas, 1 full-time manager, and we have humble ambitions to continue to grow. We finally took a bird's eye view to our coffee program and are setting impact goals with different roasters here in Atlanta. One of that is to do a carbon accounting of from the seed to cup, which I think is going to be really fantastic and novel. And we've got other really ambitious impact goals. So now this fledgling e-com business really has kind of a stake in the game, and we're hopefully well positioned to make sure that Atlanta becomes the type of coffee market ecosystem that the folks who really have their heart and soul in it want it to be. And that is one that is inclusive, that is led by BIPOC roasters that have for so long been left out of the coffee world in a meaningful way. And that continues to push the envelope in the respect of how we are thinking about impact at the producer level. And that's always been my goal. So it's pretty awesome to see so much work having already transpired over a year, and we're just getting started.
I'm going to give you a compliment now. You should get on more podcasts. I'm being serious.
Thank you.
People like hearing about companies with mission, with purpose, and for people that mean it, I guess, is the best way to put it, right? Because it's very hip now. It's very happening to, like, you know, say you're queer friendly or to have some sort of greater economic cause or whatever. But it's clear that, like, this is who you are, what you believe in. So if you're listening, and have other podcasts you should be on, or we should figure it out later. But go on, you know, and there's a ton of them. There's a million, like, it's a million podcasts and YouTube channels and whatever, and, like, you know, Atlanta related or queer related or coffee related. There's many ways for you to go.
Well, thank you.
So, and that's free. That's my free PR advice for you right there.
Fantastic.
But how did you actually come to be in here, like coming out of school, you know, working as a bartender? Did you get grants? Did you apply for loans?
Thank you absolutely so much for asking. As somebody with grad school loans,
right?
I have found it tremendously hard to access capital.
Correct.
So if you if you know how to access capital, anyone that's listening, you reach out.
I know some people that skip $1,000 coins across the Chattahoochee.
Fantastic. Yeah, give them my number. So we started piece by piece. So what started as a cold brew bar originally, because I needed desperately for a proof of concept to even invest in a $6,000 machine. And then we did that, and we had that for about 2 months, and we quickly outgrew that capacity. And so we've just taken money that we've...
And where was that? Here?
Here.
You started just as cold brew?
We started just as cold brew.
I don't know if I remember that.
Good, please. And I hope that everyone forgets that one day.
Honestly, was there just a tap? Were you out there? Were you in here?
No, we were in here. We were making cold brew. Like I said, I had all of these relationships with the coffee world, but I didn't have any access to capital, and I had a tremendous amount of debt myself. So we piecemealed it together, and so it's definitely been... I have proven to myself time and time over again that, you know, my sense of grit and tenacity can quite frankly move mountains. And I very much look forward to the day in which I don't have to do that. definitely feels like my experience as an entrepreneur is a lot different than others for many reasons. And the difficulty fundraising would be one of them.
Yeah, I can tell you of all the things that I've done, like, I'm super proud that, like, I've done everything I've ever done without a degree or business plan or a giant check from anybody. Now, I'm not saying it's the way to do it, but it's how I've done it, because I don't know any other way, mm-hmm. right?
Well, I imagine, too, that your ability to create relationships and to connect with folks is that web that allows you to break that kind of typical trajectory model, right? Do right. A, get B, do B, get C.
Right. Yeah. And for me, since we're learning about each other, it's one of the things that I'm good at, right? Like I often say, like, I can't fix a car, right? Mm-hmm. I can't, like, I don't know how, you know, to do code computing. I'm good at talking to people. Mm-hmm. And so once I just sort of leaned into that, like, that's kind of how it went, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I relate to that wholeheartedly.
Right. Which, you know, when you have a house, and we have a house now, like, I don't have, I have to hire people to do stuff.
Humble brag. He has a house.
We just moved from here. We were renting for years. We just bought a house.
Congratulations.
And things need to get fixed. And we have to, like, use the TaskRabbit app because we don't know how to do stuff. My wife, if we put a cabinet together, we are fucking thrilled. It is like, it is a celebration if we do something like that.
Maybe that should be a 2022 resolution.
To learn how to build stuff?
Yeah. Build one thing.
I'd rather not, honestly. But that's one of the things that I've learned. I used to read a lot of books, and I've been to a lot of seminars, and I was always trying to fix the things I wasn't good at. And now I'm just like, let's focus on the things I'm good at and do more of that and pay for everything else, if you can.
My soccer coach used to say, and mind you, it was in respect to my ability to do headers, like with a soccer ball sort
right.
of thing, but make your strengths stronger and your weaknesses adequate. And that has... I mean, I still think that that's debatably one of the most important things I've ever learned.
I think it's great. Many of my weaknesses are not adequate. They're true weaknesses. But I'm totally okay with it. When I stopped trying to fix them, it just felt a lot better.
More authentic?
Well, just more like, it was like beating my head against the wall, right? Because I'd see people who were really good at things, like management. Like, I'm not good at that. And it's when I finally accepted that, it's okay. Like, I'm real good at the, let's go over here. Right? Let's go fucking make this happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know how, but let's go do it. But then when it comes to like managing the quote unquote team or whatever, I'm not so good at. So mm-hmm. I try to do minimal of that or leave it to other people. You seem to be good at that. You have a great team.
I got so lucky. I do have a great team though. not quite sure that it's thanks to me, but hey, here we are kicking ass nonetheless.
Well, if I come get a cup of coffee and the person engages me, engages my kids, after a few times knows what I drink, like, it's not a high, high list of things, but it's the kind of stuff that, like, makes a huge difference. Like, I'm like now where I work downtown, and there's a, hold your ears, there's a Caribou downstairs, and that's where I go to get my coffee, and I know them all, right? And, like, once in a while, there's a new guy, and he's like, what would you like? And can I get your name? And it's like, oh, man, you know what I mean? And it's mm-hmm. it's not a big deal, but it's like, it's so nice. Like, that's like that, you want to go, everybody knows your name. Like, it's so simple, yep. But like, I don't think you can teach that. I think mm-hmm. you can give guidance, but I think the genuineness that I've received from your baristas, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, is what I've received since you opened a year ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it starts at a name on an order, but it goes back to, if you don't come in for a few weeks, we're going to send bat signals. We've got a team text message that we're asking about you. We're right. wondering where the hell you are. We're going to be excited when you come back. And I think that that's one of the things.
I'm not sure I'm a fan of getting text messages, but that's okay.
Don't worry. They're just about you.
They're just about me?
Yeah, they're just about you.
What do you mean?
If you don't come in, we're wondering where you are.
Oh. Does it say, where have you been? Please text no to stop or something? Because I've never gotten one.
No. It's a team text message between like our baristas. We're like, hey, where the hell is Kayla? I haven't seen her in forever.
Oh, team. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Don't worry. We won't literally
okay.
send you messages.
Okay.
Yet. It's actually kind of a good idea.
Well, I can tell you that it's kind of like the phone, again, once upon a time, you did not know who was calling you. This call could be important. Let me pick it up. Then once upon a time, you could like, oh my God, I can screen calls using this magic answering machine, right? Giving you a big history lesson, Atlanta listeners. Then caller ID came. Oh my God, caller ID, right? Now you...
Before caller ID, star 69.
Well, that was never fun though. But caller ID is just like, bam. And then, and now we literally don't answer the phone if we don't know you. So...
I think that that's how we know that there's some years between us. The fact that you just said star 69 wasn't fun.
Right.
That's like debatably my favorite pastime.
Oh, okay.
You get a call, you call back, prank calling. Come on.
No, we prank called for sure. Dude, did we prank call? I'm going to tell a story on this show I've never told before. We called my friend Paul and I. Paul was older than me. We taped a message. You have won a blah, blah, blah. Leave your name and number, blah, blah. And we totally did that to people. And they would. And we thought it was fucking hilarious. They're talking to a fake machine that existed. I telemarketed, okay? I used to call people on the phone and they would pick up and give me information, right? From their home phone while they're eating dinner. Look at the look
You're
on her.
You're such a scammer.
The look on her face. No, this was.
You should go on Scam Goddess.
This was for a free lawn care estimate. This was not fake. This was real. This was
I love that as a kid, that was your idea of a good time. Ha ha. Let's get Tim down the street's phone number.
No, you're
free lawn.
No, these are two distinct things. One is me and my friend Paul calling you and tell you want a free large pizza or a Jeep. Oh. Then in my 20s, calling people and saying, hey, do you want a free lawn estimate? We're going to be out in your neighborhood this week. That was a real thing.
Oh, that was actually your.
Right. Now. Like, it's amazing. Do you want to hear? Like, they're so good now. I feel like I want to play one. It's like, hey, it's Susan. You know, I'm just calling you one more time about this loan we want to give you. It's like, sounds so casual. Like, whoever Susan is, they're not paying her enough. Because if you didn't know better, you would totally. Like, I bet my kids would think it's real, even. I mean, my kids love picking up the phone when it's a scammer. They love to, like, make fun of them. But that lady sounds real. Susan, you're doing a great job.
Are we telling scam stories now?
Oh, well, you've got that whole podcast.
I actually have one that my
Hang on, let's hear one. Let's hear.
Susan, this one's for you.
Hey, this is Emma. I just wanted to follow back up with you in regards to voicing to the mic. That would reduce your debt and give you a small monthly payment. If you are still interested, you can reach me at 888-388.
Emma sounds like a longtime friend of yours.
Right. Emma, crushing it. Bet that's not a real name. Emma, if you're listening, that's amazing. You should have a fucking cameo, Emma. I will pay you to leave messages for my friends. Have you purchased any cameos? Do you know what they are?
No, I have not.
Okay. Celebrities, like small C mostly, you give them $50 or $100 or $200 and they'll do a message for your friend. Like, hey, Kayla, at Fink and Filter, I hear you're a huge fan of the Dallas Cowboys. I played for the Dallas Cowboys, or you're a huge fan of this television show that I was once on.
I'm not a fan of the Dallas Cowboys, for the record.
Okay. Are you a fan of the Arizona Cardinals?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tepid fan.
Tepid fan. Got it.
Yeah, bandwagon at best.
Anyhow, where the hell were we?
I was going to tell you a scam story.
Yes.
Central theme of the podcast.
But before that, we were talking about getting money to start a company and blah, blah, blah. Where were we? I said your staff is awesome. So what is the hiring process here? Does the ad say we're super queer friendly? Come work for us.
You know what? I think at this iteration, it just says that we are hiring and folks are excited, hungry to work for places in which they can come and kind of let their guard down and be themselves. And so there's absolutely no prerequisite to kind of identify as queer, not at all. But we do ask all of our teammates to be super respectful and authentic, and that starts at kind of immediately when they walk through the door, and that definitely both weeds people out and attracts the right candidates. We've just gotten incredibly lucky with whom we've attracted. Their skill set has elevated our game. Their personalities have made my life richer.
What is the minimum age to work here?
The legal minimum age, so 18.
Okay. So I would like to send my kids. Emma's 14. Emma's amazing. She's a sweetheart. So in 4 years, you may have outgrown this place by now, but who knows? I'll send her to come work for you because you seem like a cool lady to work for.
Fantastic.
I'm always fascinated with scaling and keeping staff, especially because it's my weakness. And I also, because I just know how hard it is. Mm-hmm. So how do you keep people long term, you know, in any, let's just say service business, right? Food service business, any business that's like usually temporary, usually like they're doing that so that they can go do something else. You bartended and now you're doing this. So people in there are going to launch their own fincas or whatever they're going to do. So how do you keep people around?
I think any great boss in the service.
Hang on a second. Let's wait for the plane to go by.
I think any great boss in the service industry understands that they have to cultivate people with the goal of them outgrowing what they're currently doing. So we often use this lily pad analogy that we're happy to be folks' lily pads to their next endeavor, whether that be entrepreneurship, you know, teaching, whatever that is. And we're also happy to be that lily pad to a different role within our company. And I think you have to try to cultivate people so that they can be the type that they can grow and outgrow you. You know, the most toxic industry environment is the one in which they want to keep people forever and keep them stagnant. And
right.
that idea of like stagnant is so imperative.
Right.
So I don't think that we definitely don't have the secret sauce yet figured out, being that we're only a year old, but I hope that, and I'm optimistic, that some of our team will be with us and be a formative part of how we grow, because we are.
Well, I've seen the same people for a year, so I know you're doing something, and then you brought over somebody that I liked at another place, right?
Yeah, it's true. And I think we're intentional about making sure that we're paying competitive, that we're hiring people that they want to work with, and that we're being the types of leaders that they want to work with and work for, without being a martyr. I think for a long time I had this idea of like martyr leadership. I don't know if that, and that martyr leadership is this idea of let me sacrifice everything for my team.
Right.
And what it actually does is establish this leadership style where everyone has to, like, where you are setting the example of working to the bone, exhausting yourself. And that's toxic. And you have to have an example of what a leader looks like.
I had a phone call with a guy this morning. That's how he leads. And he thinks it's great. He came from the stock world and used a stock world example as why it's good. And I'm like, yeah, you want to just make as much money as possible. That's not what your company's doing.
No. quite frankly, as we grow, it's super interesting because where coffee companies would cut costs, we're in fact looking to pay more. So that's speaking to our coffee program, opposed to cutting costs of those. We're looking to create badass partnerships in which we work with these roasters to ensure that more money is getting to the producer.
Right. So, you know, obviously the folks that I've been having on in the last couple of years, we, you know, pandemic has come up. It's like, how did you survive? What did you do? And specifically with you, you know, if someone runs a gym, right, that's a huge thing, right? But they don't have supply chain issues, right? Mm-hmm. They have like, can people fucking even come in here because we're in a worldwide pandemic? But for your company, you know, all we've heard, and I try not to pay too much attention to the news, is supply chain issues, everything's 10 times as much, blah, blah, blah. So what have you experienced in the last year with all that stuff?
That all of that is true. That all of that is absolutely true. And so now as we chart our 2022 plan, part of that is the storytelling piece and making sure that we're able to convey to the consumer, to our clientele, why they may be paying more money for coffee and why that bag of coffee is priced differently than what they see on the supermarket shelves. And making sure that we're speaking to that value add and who's adding it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But absolutely, our entire back room is full of cups because when you can order them, you have to order 10 to be able to outlast the times in which mm-hmm. they are stuck in the middle of the ocean.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's rough.
Yeah. And at our scale, because we're not yet kind of a multi-unit operation, being able to buy from the folks who could ensure that supply chain and help us cut those costs, we're not there. So I'll be excited when we're able to do that and we're able to have a little bit of clout that will allow us to secure these supply chains.
Right. Uh-huh. Here's a question that I've never asked anybody. I'm so glad I have you here. Everyone knows that in the restaurant industry, right, like 15% is kind of standard. If you kind of give a shit, you go 20 or higher, right? Like, right? My cup of coffee, right, which I buy every day, sometimes twice a day, I've never known. And so sometimes I press the button. Like when we had cash, you just dumped the cash. You didn't even think twice. Like, here's the whatever. Now that you can ask for it every day, I'll do the 15 some days. I'll do the 10 some days. Sometimes I do none because I've been there three times already. What is good?
Ooh, I will first and foremost say that our clientele is very generous. There are neighborhoods across the city in which the coffee, just speaking to the coffee community, like their baristas really struggle because there's not this culture of tipping.
Right.
Baristas on average are paid a living wage, whereas like restaurant...
They're paid like $2 an hour.
Servers are not.
Right.
So that's fantastic. We need to keep doing that, pay more, and we need the guest to continue to show love in tipping.
Right.
Our tip average is 20%.
Okay.
On some days, it's 22%.
That's great.
I will leave you with that. Yeah.
Okay. Great.
And our team, I mean, they go above and beyond, so we all know they're worth it.
Well, I think you've got the kind of place that is conducive to that, right? Like, if I go to Dunkin' or Starbucks, even if I get to know my people, which I do, I know this might be, like, again, block your ears, but that Dunkin' up the street certainly was here before anything was here, and yes, it's a chain, but, like, it's my local, it's my small business. Sweetie, that's the manager up there. Like, I know her by name. Her husband's name is Happy, okay? I know most of the employees there, right? They go through a lot of employees. Some leave and come back, blah, blah. They know me. They know my kids, like, blah, blah, blah. So it's like I've gotten to know them and appreciate them, mm-hmm. right? So, but again, they're, like, they've got a tip cup out, but nobody even thinks twice about it. For a place mm-hmm. like this, because it's small, because it's this is my local coffee person, I just did air quotes, listeners, and it is kind of built in with a little thing on the phone. I like that it tells me the percentage and the amount because it's really small, right? Whereas when you go to a restaurant, right, like 20% could be $40, whatever mm-hmm. it is for a big meal or whatever. So it's like, oh, well, it's actually not that much. You know, I'll give more than 20, right?
Yep.
But I don't think anybody's ever, like, honest, I am surprised if I'm ever out with people as an adult and they don't do at least 20. Like, I'll, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
absolutely.
Always, but there are people out there that, like, just, they just weren't raised right, I guess. I feel like if you've ever worked in the service industry at all, you always go above and beyond tipping.
Yes.
But still, some people haven't, I guess.
There are the folks who don't believe in tipping as a principle. And to that I say, fantastic. Let's disrupt the whole system. But your lack of tip is only hurting, you know, the person at the end of that transaction.
Right. Yeah, I don't know who thinks that. Except for the guy
in
Reservoir Dogs. So they don't tip.
Yes. And
because they're paid a living wage over there. A real wage.
Exactly.
Right. Well, that's not their fault then.
Yeah. And it's built into the prices. But the way here, if I overnight added a dollar to your cup of coffee to offset what we were paying our team members,
right,
you'd be like, get lost, Kayla. So
right.
Until that whole culture changes.
Right.
Please continue to tip both big box chain and small business team members.
Okay. No, this is good. I'm glad I asked. I should start asking people what they do. I don't know. Just like, I have no problem tipping, but I guess for some reason, sometimes I just hit zero. I'm like, oh, I've been here twice today already.
What if we, on name tags, we started putting like our names, our pronouns, and like how much we tip? Like Kayla, she, her, 20%.
I think that's a good way to do it.
I think it's the only way to do it.
I've had a similar thought. Do you run at all?
Big runner. Huge runner.
I feel like she's being sarcastic.
I am.
Okay, so I'm a runner, and I run a lot of miles, and I run a lot of, like, slowish miles. And I'll see somebody come flying by me, and I'm like, they should have a number on their head. Like, I'm doing 1 mile today. It's like, well, yeah, of course you can go fucking 7-minute miles and you're going 1 mile today. Like, fuck you. I'm out here doing 10. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Slow the fuck down. So I feel like we have similar things there. So, are you in more than one place now?
We have one current coffee bar,
right.
And we are very excited to enter the Adair Park community with some incredible partners in kind of a, we'll once again be in the co-tenancy.
Is it the Bark Place?
No, this is...
You can say it's okay.
I think we can. So we're...
By the time this comes out, it'll be a few weeks.
We're opening a coffee bar with our friends over at Create Atlanta.
Okay. Have I heard of that? I feel like I have. Without an E? Create without an E?
No, with an E. If you haven't heard of it, you will.
Okay.
So Create Atlanta is a space on the other side of the train tracks from where we are currently. It's an old warehouse that will become the...
Sorry. I was... When you said Adair Park. Adair Park is right there.
Yeah.
I was thinking... Blah, blah, park. Okay. So is that not too close to be your own place? Should you not be further?
You know, train tracks have disrupted this part of Atlanta. I'm sure that you could speak to that. Going home, I live in the Chosewood Park area. Going home, we have to cross 3 different train tracks.
See, if you just jogged 2 miles that way, you'd be home.
Yeah. It'd be much quicker. If I stayed on the Beltline, it takes me 7 minutes to get home.
If you walk it?
If I bike it.
Okay. Well, fucking bike then. What are you doing?
I know.
Save the environment.
I know. I'm often carrying about...
Yeah, hippie, dirty, queer lady. get a fucking basket. Look like the Wicked Witch of the West.
Okay.
Surrender, Dorothy.
Perfect. I'm on it.
Okay.
With New Year's resolution.
Okay.
Train
tracks.
Yes. So we've also wondered, is it too close?
Right.
And we are optimistic that no, that all of these neighborhoods are such... kind of like micro economies.
Right.
In
Everybody
themselves.
Wants to walk across the street for a cup of coffee.
Everybody wants to walk across the street.
Yeah. So like, for example, I don't have one where I live now. I have to come here.
I have to. Oh, what a burden.
But I still also go to my dunk sometimes, so.
Boo. Just kidding. So yeah, the space though will be a co-working space that with ambitions of ensuring that... development, that technology is
rooted.
Oh,
well, if you're inside a co-working space, that's a big difference because then you got built-in customers.
Yes. So we'll actually both have a coffee bar that is oriented towards the folks who are there to hunker down and work in this co-working space. And we'll also have a coffee camper that will be on the edge of the space and function a lot like a drive-through. So very exciting to be able to serve the Adair Park community in both of those
ways. Well, are they open yet? Because I'd like to get a spot there. I might be looking for a new office.
I think you absolutely should. The type of like curation and ideas that they're going for are, it's just, hold that thought.
Are you going to go empty that? Something's overflowing, ladies and gentlemen. We don't know what. She is running over and she stopped it. Phew, that was close.
Save the world. One barrel of beer at a time. Yes, you should absolutely consider having an
office. I'll give you a dollar if you dunk your head in that barrel of beer. Just like that.
One time, I took a shower in Altair, everyone's Atlanta's favorite IPA, because a gasket came loose and I was covered in beers, IPA in the eye,
ouch,
trying to get the hose reattached.
Right.
I'm pretty much...
Well, have you ever heard you can't plug up that dike or whatever that... You can't fill that hole in that... Do you know that phrase?
No. What's that phrase?
I'm sorry if I just broke the listener's ear by dropping my phone.
Put that in the copy.
Oh, boy. That was good. That's going to make the outtakes. You know, some shows do the cute little outtakes. I don't. It's too much work to edit that shit. So this will just make the actual show. But there's a phrase there that I'm missing.
Clearly. That's like when former President Bush was like, fool me once, shame on you.
Right.
Fool me twice, well, I won't be fooled again.
Right. Exactly.
It's pretty good. So back to the conversation at hand. Create Atlanta. The space will be super tech-driven and super solution-oriented. So I think that you'd be remiss to not have it.
Who doesn't want to have the Atlanta podcast out of their own? Who doesn't want that?
Absolutely.
Right?
There's going to be the Atlanta's kind of most cutting-edge technology thinkers, also organizations. There's going to be folks fighting for voting rights, for reproductive justice, all while drinking fantastic coffee provided by moi.
And your wonderful team.
And my wonderful team.
All right. We are at the portion of the program where I ask you a series of things that are your favorites. It's called the Atlanta Favorites Quiz, in which there are no wrong answers. Are you ready?
No.
I'm going to ask you anyway.
Okay.
What is your go-to order at the Waffle House?
A waffle.
And?
Waffle.
That's it?
Just one waffle.
Okay. Butter, syrup, anything?
I don't believe in butter on waffles, just syrup.
Okay. What is your current favorite restaurant, place to eat in Atlanta?
Little Bear, although I've never been there.
Okay, why is it your favorite place?
Because in everything I've heard about it, the folks behind it, it's based out of Summerhill, just stunning. The plateware that they use is stunning. Everything that they stand for, stunning.
Do you think you might eat there?
I really hope so. They're on winter vacation.
Okay, I've never heard someone place they've never been to, but it's totally acceptable. Publix or Kroger?
Publix.
Why?
The sandwich bar.
Okay. I am also a fan of sandwich bar.
Or Bar Kroger. I do like the bar at the Pond City Kroger.
Okay. You just sit up there and grab a drink?
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay.
It's the hottest spot in town.
Crow Bar is kind of what we call it. Rank these in importance to you. Okay. Falcons, Braves, Hawks, United.
Braves, United, Falcons, Hawks.
Okay. You a big baseball fan?
I am now. Biggest bandwagon fan. My partner,
as long as you're honest about it.
Yeah, my partner is a huge Braves fan.
Now, when you say partner...
My girlfriend.
Okay.
Yeah. She...
That was a joke, ladies. I'm referring to the previous conversation.
We actually had the great honor of going to one of the World Series games.
Ooh.
It was fantastic. It was actually the game where I think it was Freddie hit that incredible...
She's drawing things with her hands. She's making tennis moves.
I know.
Were you in like a cool box seat or just regular seats?
We had fantastic seats, but regular seats.
Okay. You weren't like treated to like a suite.
No, we were close enough to have an excellent time, but not in a box seat. So we still had some douchebag FaceTiming his girlfriend during this incredible game. So
motherfucker.
I know.
Didn't have that in my day. Nobody was FaceTiming anybody.
I know. Well, you know. Grass isn't
green. Do you know that I used to have a pager? That's how old I am. God damn it, those were good times. Hang on a second, I got a page. Anybody know where a phone is? Is there a payphone? These are phrases you don't hear anymore.
That's true.
I know.
Good.
Anyhow, continuing on, what is your favorite festival in Atlanta?
Oh my goodness, this is such a hard one because there are so many. Can I give multiple answers?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I already told you there's no wrong answers.
There is a outdoor music festival that happens out here. It's all classical music. I'm forget blanking on the name.
Is it here?
It happens, like, it happens in the West End.
Okay.
Fantastic. Music in the Streets.
Okay.
Fantastic. Accidentally stumbled upon Stomp and Chomp in Cabbage Town for the first time ever.
Okay.
So fun.
Right.
It's a chili festival.
Right.
And the Lantern Parade, also a really cool one.
Okay.
Which will be happening in on this side of town this year, which is fun.
See, because I'm very, I try to feel superior to other people. You know, we've been here since 2015, and this was just dirt, and I would run on it when it was just dirt. I'm pointing to the Beltline. I would always correct people when they see the Beltline. I'm like, which side of town do you mean? Do you mean the East Side Beltline or the West Side Beltline? And as this thing gets bigger and bigger, you will have to do that.
Yes.
Or I get, it'll be interesting to see how people talk about it, because, you know, as this goes from here to Edgewood, you know, it's west to north-ish. And it would just be interesting to see what people, how people describe it, because it used to be, when you say the Beltline, people meant, you know, Ponce City Market, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the cool side of the Beltline.
Right. Fuck those people.
Fuck those people.
Do you have a favorite concert you've seen in Atlanta?
No, and listeners, please don't hate me.
Okay.
Love music, never go to concerts.
That's okay.
I know.
I don't go anymore. I went all the time as a youth. I don't go anymore.
As a youth.
I'm asleep by, you know, we're in bed by 8. We're asleep by 9:30, 10.
9 p.m. bedtime is like the sweet spot for
me. Right. Okay. My final question. Who should I have next on the Atlanta podcast?
I think you should have the folks behind Create ATL.
Okay.
Puya and Dana.
You should introduce me.
I would love to.
If you want to give a shout out to your social channels or anything else before we wrap it up.
You can follow us at Think at a Filter across all platforms.
All right. Good talk.
Good talk.
See you later.
Catch you later, alligator.